You're listening to the Primetime Roundup Podcast. And now here's your host, Walker.
Welcome back. Thank you for checking in. It is the Primetime Roundup Podcast, episode 78. Yes, I am Walker from Georgia's own Walker and Macy in the Morning. Alongside, on the phone, TV fan, expert, enthusiast, and Brad Pitt's divorce lawyer, talking to Rick Hammond, also known as the Moose. What's going on, man?
What's up? I don't get that one. I caught up on my tabloids.
I was going to say, you haven't been watching the news the last couple of days. This is all anybody wants to talk about. So Brad Pitt allegedly has not been paying child support since he and Angie got divorced a year ago. Or what she said is he hasn't paid meaningful child support. I don't know what that means when you're super rich. But I'll give you a little bit of a hint. He says he's paid her $1.3 million in the last year. That sounds pretty meaningful to me.
That means a lot to me.
And even more, on top of that, Brad Pitt says that he loaned Angie $8 million recently so she could buy the house that she's currently living in. So sounds to me like he's given her over $9 million in the last year. But in Hollywood, you know, things are different, man.
Wasn't meaningful.
I think I loaned you $40 one time, you know.
That was pretty meaningful.
Same, right? Here we are. We are talking movies. We're talking TV. We will get to movie stuff later. Definitely want to dive into this Oscar controversy and the new plan for the show coming up this year, since not a lot of people watched it last year, and the new categories that they've added. That's the thing that's making everybody pull their hair out. But we'll get there. First, I wanted to talk about a couple of shows we saw this week. Episode 5 of Sharp Objects on HBO. If you haven't heard us talk about it, it's an 8-episode mini season, and I guess that's all they're going to do because it's based on the book, and there really can't be more once you get to the conclusion. We assume.
Wow. Unless Big Little Lies has got a season 2 coming out.
Right.
So.
I mean, I guess we could go that route. But we're assuming this is all we're going to have. So let's go with that. We just saw episode 5. There's 3 episodes left. And I'm starting to get concerned, Rick, that we're not going to wrap this up in the next 3 episodes. Because I got to be honest, I feel like not much happened on Sunday night. Would you go with that?
Yeah, we're definitely not getting any closer.
They gave us a lot of new characters, honestly, which is weird to be getting close to the end, and now they're introducing... I mean, I guess the drama teacher wasn't necessarily a new character. We saw him in, like, one scene 2 episodes ago. But the whole premise of this episode was Calhoun Day, which is absolutely the worst holiday. I mean, I don't even remember, honestly, what the point of Calhoun Day was. Do you?
It was how the town was founded. So it was a celebration of the horrible tragedies that founded this weird little town.
I like how Amy Adams referred to whoever, Millie Calhoun or whoever it was, as her great-great-great-grand victim. Because basically that's what happens. It's a horrible story of what happened to Millie Calhoun way back in the day, and it's portrayed by Amma in this episode. When Amma disappeared, did you think she was dead? I kind of did.
No, but I'm still confused why they made us think she was dead at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, I thought that's what was going to happen. I was certain that she was going to wander into that shed and find her there, because that was the scene we saw in the episode before.
Right.
It was like it was one of her weird flashes. I mean, it wasn't necessarily something that we know is going to happen, but a lot of the flashes she has, they end up coming true.
Well, I was thinking most of the flashes seem to be the past. Mm-hmm. Everything had seemed to be the past, and if she was showing stuff from the future, maybe I wasn't catching it as much, and that's why I guess I latched right on. I thought that was it. I thought that's how that episode ended. She was gone.
I read a recap of this episode, and what we're trying to figure out is who's murdering people in this small little town of Windgap. And whoever the person is that wrote this review for Rolling Stone seemed to be on board with me. Like, hey, we think that Amma is the one that murdered those 2 girls. You know, again, we can't really say anything at this point. We're just kind of throwing darts at the wall because we didn't learn any more clues in this episode. I feel like all we did was watch Camille and her boyfriend drink and have lots of sex.
I think my favorite thing about this show is how she drinks openly. Like, she'll be in a bar and have a huge drink. She'll go to a party. She announces that she's drinking. She'll pour a huge drink right in front of everybody and still has, like, a secret drink.
Right.
Still has, like, a water bottle and her purse is full of vodka, and she's drinking on that. Like, when you're drinking, like, woohoo out in public and hiding drinking, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not that bad an alcoholic.
Uh-huh. I'm glad you mentioned the water bottle, because they've made a point all season long to do close-up shots on these water bottles that she carries around. And I kept wondering, like, what's the significance of her drinking water? Like, you know, because even the sound effects, like, you'll very clearly hear the water bottle crinkle, like when she carries it around. It's just they make a big point of it. And then I kind of figured out in this last episode, oh, it's vodka.
Oh. Well, didn't they show us that, like, the first episode?
They probably did, and I just
I think that's the first thing she did when she dumped everything out at the hotel, is she dumped the water out of the water bottle and filled it full of vodka.
Mm-hmm.
So I just assumed it's what's always, and that's the significance of the water bottle. I just assumed it was always vodka.
Yeah, I just wondered, like, the whole time, like, what's the significance of the water bottle, and what's the significance of Led Zeppelin? Like, why does she...
Led Zeppelin, yeah.
That's the only thing she listens to. What's up with that?
Well, they gave us that one. I mean,
yeah,
see that, right?
Yeah, she learned, I guess she kind of learned about Led Zeppelin from the woman in the... institution.
She wasn't a music person. That was the whole setup. And so this girl was like, this is how I escape. And that's right. What she listened to. So I don't know if it's her escape or if it just reminds her of that girl. But
I'm thinking she probably should discover some new music. There's been some other bands since 1977. I don't know. Actually, in all fairness, I have really enjoyed the soundtrack. I like it when she drives around and cranks up every obscure Led Zeppelin song. That's fun to me. Kind of the charm of this show, though, is everything's very, very subtle. You know, we talked about on a previous episode the little words that you'll see written on things, and, you know, do they have any meaning, or is it just for her? We saw in this episode where... I guess Emma stole her clothes, and, you know, she was forced to, like, reveal all the cutting that she had done. And, you know, there's just words and sentences.
Words there, yeah.
And she's got this article now that she's put out that's made everybody really upset in the town. So now everybody's mad at her. Everybody's mad at her boyfriend. So they slink off to a hotel room to have sex. So where it goes from here is anybody's guess.
You said nothing much really happened on this episode. You said a lot happened. I don't know if it had anything to do with the murders, but a lot happened.
Right. That's the point. None of it had anything to do with the crime we're trying to solve. But, you know, we know a lot more about these people now, so I guess that's a good thing.
It was my favorite episode, though. I think that's why, because it was kind of a break. It was like it was Calhoun Day. Like, it was like a break.
Right.
It was like a break for us. It was like a break for them. It was like Calhoun Day. Like, we're just going to have Calhoun Day, and not worry about what's going on. That was kind of neat the way they did it, Addy, for us, the way it would have kind of been for them. Like, they had to take a day off from the case. And, of course, they're not. The cops are still kind of looking around. But
And the two main suspects end up in a fist fight, so there you go.
Right.
I will not be celebrating Calhoun Day next year. I'll tell you that right now. Moose, Better Call Saul is back. Season 4, Episode 1, aired on AMC on Monday night. And we got a little bit more of the, as you called it last week, the black and white world that sometimes Saul Goodman exists in, which I guess is set in current day. He goes to the hospital. He gets asked a bunch of questions about his social security number. He obviously gets very squirrely because he's been on the run now for some time, for years, I think. And then he gets in the cab, and the cab driver's really weird, and he has an Albuquerque Isotopes chain around his rearview mirror. And Albuquerque, of course, is where all the stuff took place in Breaking Bad. So that alerts Jimmy that something's not right, and then Jimmy gets out of the cab, and the guy seems to be following him. So is somebody on to him? Is he in trouble?
Yeah, I didn't even catch the isotopes thing. Yeah. So.
Well, later in the episode, Mike was watching an Albuquerque Isotopes baseball game. So that was a theme in this episode for some reason. Again, you said at one point you would like to kind of exist a little more in this black and white world this season and find out what's going on with Jimmy these days rather than all the backstory. I mean, surely somebody from years ago is not still looking for him.
You know, I can't even remember where we were at the end of Breaking Bad, right? And who was left, who really we're running from at this point. But they're as bad as most of the bad guys I remember on that show. Yeah. They're probably not giving up too easy.
That's a good point. All right, so we saw that Chuck committed suicide. We saw that at the end of last season and Chuck's funeral. Jimmy seems to be taking this pretty poorly. They showed that scene where him and Kim drank the bottle of tequila, but he never would say anything. He just kind of sat there, and then he was talking to Howard, and I guess he realized that Chuck's suicide was in some ways his own fault. We've been waiting for the catalyst that turns Jimmy into Saul. Is this it? His brother's suicide? Is this what's going to turn him?
First of all, they killed my favorite character, so I'm a little bummed by that. He wasn't quite as my favorite the last season, I don't think, but the first couple of seasons, he was my favorite character. So I'm a little bummed by that. I didn't expect that. I kept waiting for him to let me off the hook, and I never did.
Oh, I like Chuck, too. I mean, no question.
I'm waiting for the witness relocation or something, but no.
Like everyone else on this show. Also, Mike Ehrmantraut, we see him do this really frustrating thing that we talked about last season where we just have to watch Mike do something odd.
Random.
Right. Like last season, he's like dismantling a car for like 15 minutes in one episode. And there's this like jazzy music playing in the background. Very similar in this episode. He's driving around a warehouse in a golf cart. Why?
Like he works there. Yeah, it's so funny because you don't know where it's going. It gets somewhere, obviously, but you have no idea where. So instead of them setting the scene and saying, okay, he's going to investigate this company, we just are on an errand run with Mike. It's so weird because you're like literally watching for like 10 minutes and you don't know what you're watching. You're just watching him run errands. He's in a break room at a company he doesn't work, talking to the coworkers, signing somebody's birthday card.
And then he participates in this like 5-minute conversation about who would win in a fight between Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali. And you start to think like, wow, this show is really wasting my time. And then, you know, then the next scene they give you something good. I don't know.
Well, it's two different shows. You're watching Better Call Saul, and then every 15 minutes you get like this HGTV show starring Mike Ehrmantraut, where he goes to the hardware store and picks out a new plunger.
He was outside of that booth.
I wouldn't watch it. I'm just saying it's a different show.
He was outside of that booth where he worked there at one point, and this guy wanders up, and he's like, "Hey, man. The boss said you need to turn in your windbreaker," and he's like, "Okay," and he's like, "Sorry, man." And the guy's like, "Of course, the boss said that, blah, blah, blah." And then they go their separate ways, and that was it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like 4 minutes of screen time so he could get
his
jacket.
Well, he had to show us that he was leaving his job to go so we'd have more time to run errands.
I don't remember. Was Breaking Bad this deliberate? Were there scenes or episodes that were really slow-paced like that?
I think Mike's character has that element, more than anybody. I was just trying to remember that myself. I watched it last night. I was actually trying to remember that myself. I feel like maybe, because he was kind of this procedural guy. Mm-hmm. He was the fixer. He was, I think, there was an element of that to his character all along.
Yeah, I'll have to go back, and I've actually wanted to go back and rewatch Breaking Bad at some point. All right, let's talk about this Oscar controversy really quickly. I guess last year, I think I remember seeing 21, 22, 23 million people watch the Oscars, which is a lot of people, but not nearly what they're used to ratings-wise. So they assume there must be a reason that people aren't watching anymore, and I guess they came to figure out that the movies that are being nominated are movies that nobody's really seeing. Like, nobody really knows what these movies are. So the solution from the Academy is to create a new category for next year, and it's most popular films, or best popular film, I think is the award that's going to be handed out. What I get from this is movies like Marvel's Infinity War, or maybe Mission Impossible, or Black Panther. Something. Some of these movies are going to be in this category that did really well at the box office but didn't get a lot of critical acclaim. So that's where they're going to put them now. Is this a good idea? I kind of think it's a stupid idea.
I kind of think it's a stupid idea, but I think that's mostly because I don't really understand it. Like, what's the catalyst for that? You're just going to have a whole other category for popular movies that's going to be, what, the top five grossing movies of the year, and you're going to give it to the one that made the most money? How are you going to judge that? It sounds like so you're going to know the winner before you get there.
It seems like if you're basing it on popularity, that the biggest grossing movie would then be the winner. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Right. So you're going to know if that's the cat, right. So you're going to know before you even get there, unless they're going to take the five biggest grossing and then pick one of those.
Right.
Specifically.
I think you're onto something there. Maybe you take the biggest grossing movies, put them in the category, and then somebody votes for which is the best one. I mean, I don't know. It might add a little fun element to it, but it's like I told Macy this morning. I said that we have plenty of award shows that hand out awards for action movies and rom-coms and movies that are very popular. The MTV Movie Awards does a great job with that. You know, sometimes even the Golden Globes does it, because the Golden Globes has a bunch of different categories. The Oscars, to me, has always been a little more pure. It's like Best Picture. And of course, sometimes these are movies that I haven't heard of, but that then exposes me to new movies, which is a good thing.
It's supposed to be a little stuffy. It's not supposed to be completely inclusive. I mean, you know, they tried to make it where people that might not necessarily see some of those movies would still want to watch, like you're saying, and maybe find something to watch, or, you know, branch out a little bit. But it's not really supposed to be for everybody. If ratings are down, then I guess you got to figure something out. But yeah, the Golden Globes are more the one. They're supposed to be fun, and they're all like, it's 20 categories, and 18 of them are acting. And unlike the Oscars, where there's 20 categories, and 6 of them are acting, and you have to sit through cinematographer. And
right.
I think that's the problem. I think they just are trying to find more entertainment awards, more acting awards to give away.
Well, that's where the Oscars, honestly, that's where they lose me, is some of the categories, you know, best foreign language film, but when you're talking
about costumes.
Yeah, when you're talking about not even soundtracks, you're talking about like
sound mixing is an actually televised Oscar category. Sound mixing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's too inside baseball for me. It's like I don't even really understand what makes good sound mixing. So
I don't know. It sounded good when I saw it, but is that the sound guy or the guy who mixed it? I don't know.
Right, and I'll watch. I mean, you know, because I'm waiting to get to the part that I'm interested in. So I've always felt like they could make this show 2 hours if they did best actor, best actress, best supporting, best director, you know, best picture. And then, yeah, you got a couple of skits with the host, maybe a couple songs, and that's it. And we're done. And that is another thing that they said, is they want to make sure next year the show is actually less than 3 hours, because it's been running over 3 hours the last couple of years. And that, I'm good with that. Shorten that thing up, man. And, you know, then you get into the political realm a little bit, and people say, well, it's too political. There's too many political speeches. And I don't remember there being that many political speeches at the Oscars last year. Am I remembering that wrong?
I think there was, actually. I think there was. I think they were ready for it, and then there was a little. I think maybe because I think the Golden Globes even did a good bit.
You tend to get more of that stuff.
That's one part of the boycott. I mean, that's one part of, like, if you want to say boycott, people that have just stopped watching Oscars. The far right sees, you know, the liberal left is most of Hollywood at this point. And so it is all kind of one-sided if they are political. So it's hard to watch if you feel strongly on one side and every joke, every comedian is dissing your side.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not very even.
I get that. I do. And I don't think adding an award for Black Panther this year is going to...
I don't think that's a fix for that, but no. I don't know. When I first heard boycott of the Oscars, it seemed like a lot of people that never watched the Oscars in the first place.
Well, that's probably true.
Clearly something happened if it was down that much.
Yeah, yeah. If they felt that they had to do something to fix it, then yeah, clearly there was a problem.
Well, they did this 10 years ago. I think maybe this has been happening for a while. They did it when, you know, there was that year where there were like 20 great movies and they nominated 5. So the next year they're like, okay, we got to open it up because there's like 5 movies here that should have been nominated for Best Picture. So the next year there's 9 nominees for Best Picture to include those Dark Knight, Black Panther. Like, that's supposed to open that up and get those popular films in. Because if it's just 5, then yeah, you're going to go with the critically acclaimed. You're going to go with the typical Oscar movies.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I enjoyed last year because I ended up seeing 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I ended up seeing The Shape of Water. I ended up seeing Get Out, which I wouldn't have even seen, but, you know, then it was suddenly nominated for a bunch of awards. I mean, it just exposed me to a lot of movies I wouldn't have otherwise seen, most likely. So, yeah, I mean, I saw Black Panther anyway. I saw that opening weekend at the theater. I'm not missing that one. I mean, give me something different. Yeah, not everyone thinks like me, and that's probably a very good thing. Movies out right now. You got a couple. What is the one with Mila Kunis, The Spy Who Dumped Me, with her and Kate McKinnon? You heard anything good about that?
I saw just a clip on IMDb, but actually I don't know anything about it.
Just looks like a little buddy comedy, and they're out to solve a caper of some sort. My coworker saw it and said it was really, really funny. And I mean, hell, what isn't funny when Kate McKinnon's in it? You got Christopher Robin with Ewan McGregor, which is a shame because I asked my morning show co-host the other day what, you know, I was like, you like Ewan McGregor? And she's like, who?
Cool.
And I was like, oh, man, has he been gone for a while?
Does she watch movies?
I don't know. What's the last big thing he's been in? Star Wars? That was a while back.
He's like, since Johnny Depp started cashing pirate paychecks, I think Ewan McGregor's kind of the new Johnny Depp. He's in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
You just don't necessarily see them all.
That's right. Coming soon, we've got this new Seth Rogen project. What do you think of this? It's called The Happy Time Murders. All right, now here's a brief summary of the plot. In the seedy underbelly of Los Angeles, 2 clashing detectives, one human and the other a puppet, must work together to solve brutal murders of former cast members from a beloved puppet show. On a scale of 1 to 10, or should I say on a scale of 1 to Sesame Street, how excited are you?
I was going to say, is 10 the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life? And you told me this before the show, so did you just say Seth Rogen?
Yeah, Seth Rogen's
the
project.
Seth Rogen's project?
Actually,
yeah, that sounds about right.
This is a hell of a cast, actually. Melissa McCarthy's in this, Katherine Heigl, Maya Rudolph, you've got Elizabeth Banks, Joel McHale. I mean, I'm going to see this movie.
I wonder how this is going to go. It's like full-on comedy, you know. It wouldn't surprise me if he tried to make something like half serious and half funny. Like,
you know it's going to be completely absurd. I mean, that's the only thing you definitely know going in. All right, man. Well, this weekend, let's see, the Falcons have their first preseason game against the Jets, 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 Jets. Football season is here. Are the Falcons going to win the Super Bowl this year?
I'm glad we get to play a nice cream puff for our first game. You know, a little nobody. What have they done lately?
Not a damn thing. let's see. You also got the PGA Championship this weekend. And let's see, what else? The Braves are at home against the Brewers. Oh, and Taylor Swift is over at Mercedes-Benz Stadium this weekend. How much do you love Taylor Swift?
I mean, I don't dislike Taylor Swift.
Come on, man.
I don't know if love's ever entered into it.
She's a very talented lady, Rick. She's also a hell of a songwriter.
Man. Right, and there's something to be said for knowing your audience. I mean, she writes songs for her audience, and they're just one hit after the other. I mean, you can't deny.
I'll let you know how it goes, because I think it's going to be awesome. All right, man. We'll get back and do this again next week if you're up for it. Hopefully, we'll find out something else about the murders in Wind Gap, and I will talk to you then.
All right, man.